Bean Dad, The Dress, 30 to 50 Feral Hogs. If you knew what any of those were, you spend too much time online. And hey, I do too. 16th Minute of Fame is a new weekly podcast hosted by me, Jamie Loftus. And every week, we take a closer look at an internet character of the day. Who are they? What made them so notorious? How did the internet or the algorithm choose them? And what does a person do when they're suddenly confronted with more attention than the human psyche can handle? Listen to 16th Minute of Fame on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
It's brand new, season two. I'm Marissa Thalberg.
And I'm Stephen Wolf Fedeta. And we're excited to be back having bigger, bolder, and always real conversations.
Straight from the C-suite front lines of marketing, media, and more.
We have great friends joining from people you may know, like Wilmer Valderrama and Bobby Burke.
And people you'll want to know. So grab a coffee or, hey, even an Aperol Spritz and come join us on America's number one podcast network, iHeart.
Listen to brand new on the iHeart Radio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Something that makes me crazy is when people say, well, I had this career before, but it was a waste. And that's where the perspective shift comes, that it's not a waste, that everything you've done has built you to where you are now. This is She Pivots, the podcast where we explore the inspiring pivots women have made and dig deeper into the personal reasons behind them. Join me, Emily Tisch Sussman, every Wednesday on She Pivots. Listen to She Pivots on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Welcome back to another episode of Internet Hate Machine. So this is the final installment of our two-part episode with Francesca Fiorentini, where we look at the ways that harassment online keeps women, particularly women of color and Black women, from being able to run for and hold public office safely, and how that impacts our democracy more broadly. So in our last episode, we talked about some national leaders like Kamala Harris. And in this episode, we're zeroing in to look at some specific women in local public offices and the harassment and abuse that they faced just for trying to do their jobs. So, you know, we're talking about Harris, but I want to make it clear that when it comes to women who are running for public office, it is not always like flashy candidates with well-funded campaigns who are like running for a presidential administration. We're often talking about women running for like local offices, like school boards in their community or county commissioners. So I want to talk about a few examples of what I mean. The first is Tammy Sawyer. We'll actually hopefully hear from Tammy Sawyer in her own words later in the season. But I want to talk about her time as an elected official in Memphis, Tennessee. So Tammy Sawyer got her start in activism. She felt called to public service watching the acquittal of George Zimmerman during the murder of Trayvon Martin and the grand jury decision not to try Darren Wilson for the death of Mike Brown. She became a pretty like visible figure in the movement for Black Lives. In 2015, she organized a vigil in honor of Tamir Rice at the Health Sciences Park in Memphis. If you've ever been there in the last few years, you know that it had a statue of Confederate general and Ku Klux Klan Grand Wizard Nathan Bedford Forrest, the namesake for the movie Forrest Gump. Fun fact. In 2017, Tammy Sawyer organized the hashtag #TakeEmDown901 movement, which led to the statue being removed. In 2018 of August, she was elected to Shelby County Commissioner for District 7 in Memphis. So she was this, like, visible figure in the movement for Black Lives, but that thing that elevated her to the public stage also made her a huge target for white supremacists. Things came to a head in June when she was doing a press conference at this park during the actual removal of the monument. So here's a little bit of, like, weird backstory. Through this, like, very weird compromise, the group Sons of Confederate Veterans were responsible for hiring and overseeing the construction project to remove this Confederate statue. It sounds like they never wanted the statue to be removed in the first place, and the team that they put together and hired to remove it seemed to reflect that, right? This team that they had was obviously not thrilled that these statues were coming down, to say the least.
Yeah, that's an interesting contractor.
Sons of the Confederate Veterans, like a Confederate statue enthusiasts.
Yes.
You know,
I don't fully get it.
No. Is there no one else who can take down the statues? It's just the same people who put them up are also the people who take them down?
That's the compromise. It has to be fair. So the crew hired to take down these monuments, they ended up putting Confederate flags all over the job site. It sounds like they intentionally covered this like Black Lives Matter mural with bricks while working. Just like petty shit, right? Just like petty stunt shit. That's how they were doing this for whatever reason. I don't fully get like why or how this happened, but petty stunt shit. So a member of that crew hired to remove the monument is a man named George K. Rack Johnson, who is the founding member of a group called Confederate 901, who has a history of, like, showing up in places where Confederate monuments are being taken down. They were the group, if you remember, like, the group that was protesting a Confederate monument being taken down at Ole Miss, that was them. Mm. I found this very interesting. A piece in the Clarion Ledger says that the group is mostly white, shocker, but they do have a Black member who led one of their marches in Memphis. So, like, yay for inclusion. Something else to know about this guy is that in addition to being a founding member of this Confederate group, he loves Facebook Live. And here's what he had to say about his own presence in Pittsboro, North Carolina, on Facebook Live.
Today, I was like, I want to go to Chapel Hill. I want to go to Pittsboro. I want to go to where they've already removed the monuments, you know? And honestly, yeah, I was looking to stir the pot. But hey, they've been stirring the pot for a long damn time, and I'm about ready to make my own batch of stew, you know?
Ugh. All right. So that's him.
Ew.
Get a ring light,
my guy.
What are you doing?
Get a ring light. You want to eat people?
Yeah, that's literally what you're saying.
What?
That was my understanding as well.
Yeah, it's a very weird, gross analogy, and I don't like it at all. And so this is a person who is hired to be part of the construction crew to take down this monument, but to do it in the stuntiest way possible in Memphis, where Tammy Sawyer has, like, led this campaign to remove these monuments. And while Tammy is trying to hold a press conference at this park, Johnson stands behind her, marching back and forth, holding a Confederate flag. He uses racist insults toward her. He sings the Confederate anthem, Dixie, as he's trying to speak.
My God.
Here's a little clip of what it sounded like outside the Health and Sciences Park in Memphis that day.
So when they put all of this on social media and continue to threaten our life.
I didn't threaten your life.
When they continue to do all this and say they're going to beat my ass, but you have it on record, and they wave their racist Confederate symbols behind me. Remember. Okay? I came out here to give y'all a statement and say that this was a powerful moment. I was going to connect it to Tulsa.
It's a communist moment.
I was going to connect it to the Memphis Massacre. You know who else has been called a communist? They called Martin Luther King a communist. They called Angela Davis a communist.
You're a communist.
They called the Black Panthers communists.
You're a communist.
James Baldwin was called a communist.
You're a communist.
James Weldon Johnson was called a communist.
You're a communist.
Muhammad Ali was called a communist.
You're a communist.
Make sure you get a picture of the man who just threatened my life. The man who just said he was going to lay hands on me.
Yeah.
And then make sure you go down there when they arrest me. And remember that I do this by myself. No one comes with me.
Oh,
no.
Great.
No security.
So sad.
Coward. That's what these people are. They're cowards.
Yeah, I'm a coward. Standing right here behind.
So, you said you were going to beat my ass. I'm right here. Hide behind the fence. Come beat my ass.
If he was a man,
I'm more
a
man than you are.
Well, I'm more of a gentleman than you.
Oh, yes, Tammy. Yes, Tammy.
Remember that.
Cornflakes
Audre Lorde once said, they will kill you and say you like me. I'm not going to let him kill me. But if he does, you know who to go find, right? Y'all know where to start.
So that's really where things kind of come to a head. And honestly, it's hard to watch that because I really feel for Tammy in that video. You know, she's just trying to do her job. She obviously has to respond in this moment with, like, grace because it's happening in public. And you don't want to give these people any fodder to be like, oh, she deserved it. You know, you can't really respond the way that you might want to because of all the negative stereotypes that women deal with that we talked about earlier. And yeah, I really feel for her. Like, I feel like it's palpable to see that she's dealing with this alone.
And like Tammy was actually on my podcast, The Bituation Room, a while ago before this, and she's the most lovely person. Like, she's so wonderful and just, like, warm and thoughtful and fierce, and you can, and clearly it comes across. But it is just funny that, like, Yeah, the Confederacy has been reduced to a sad man on a random Tuesday with nothing to do, with a tiny little flag and his little, you know, his AirPods, listening to whatever the fuck he's listening to, waving his flag behind a woman in a doing a press conference. Like, Robert E. Lee would be so proud of you, sir. Oh, God. Like, keep the flame alive, you idiot. Like, you want to lose again? You fucking lost the Civil War, bitch. Like, I'm sorry. I'm just like, you can't get over the fact that you goddamn lost and you want a stupid monument to your loser ass, you know, Civil War hero. Shut the fuck up.
Fun fact, the show The Golden Girls lasted longer than the Confederacy. So maybe we should have monuments to that, you know?
Yes, we should. Sophia deserves her own monument. I, as an Italian woman, believe Sophia is our queen. It's just so sad.
It is. And so after this interaction, Sawyer filed charges against him and said that, you know, he threatened her. During the investigation, it is revealed that that same man, after she filed those charges, went on Facebook Live and read her address out loud. Here is a little bit about how she explains what went down after the incident we just heard.
Because he went on Facebook Live with a friend and offered out my address and actually emailed out my address to people telling them to send me cotton and other gifts and show me who was in charge in this country. And, you know, threatening that after January 24th, after court, that Memphis and me were going to face a reckoning. Because of those actions that came to light this weekend, the judge was forced to allow the case to continue. But the judge is also from Dyer County, and he did not want the case to continue. And he lectured Mr. Johnson and told him, you have a great lawyer. You know, why did you open your mouth? You know, don't ruin a good thing. He told him, son, don't ruin a good thing. And so I already see where this is going.
Wow. That is incredible that that was what was discussed. And so what? There's nothing left for you here?
I was in court, and when I attempted to speak, the judge told me that I don't address him. I could talk to the DA. This is the same DA that never called me, interviewed me. And actually today, when the case was continued to be set for trial in March, said I'll now have to look at this case. I have to be honest. I hadn't looked at it because I just knew it was going to be dismissed. So this is a 6-month-old situation that went viral, that was covered on your show and many others. And the DA is telling me he's never looked at the file and now he's going to have to look at it. There's still a motion to dismiss from the defense that'll be heard on March 31st.
So yeah, you can sort of get a sense that, like, it doesn't sound like anybody whose job it is to give a shit gives a shit.
She's an elected official. I believe she's still currently the commissioner, Shelby County Commissioner.
No, she was at that point, but no longer. No, she's not, like, today.
Right.
But, yeah, so she at that point, she was still an elected official. And this is how they were treating a pretty clear, problem, you know? And also keep in mind, she was a county commissioner, right? It's not like she had a well-funded security detail or, like, endless funds to dedicate to the kinds of, like, security that someone would need in a situation like this. You know, after this man made a show of having her address and a clear intent to cause her harm. And so Tammy had to fundraise for her own security. I should say, full disclosure, I do work for a organization that did help her fundraise for her security detail. So, like, I should add that. But
it only makes us like you more, Bridget.
Okay, good. I don't want someone to, like, find that and be like, wait a minute, conflict of interest. I mean, and I love Tammy, and I admire her work so much, and, like, you know, it is what it is. I
can't believe you would cover this story then. That is wow.
I mean, it's
I thought you had integrity, Bridget,
I mean,
but
yeah,
no.
It's like, you know, we saw what happened, and it felt like nobody had her back, right?
Yeah.
Like, she shouldn't have to, it shouldn't be this barrier and this cost that just she alone has to shoulder. It's not like county commissioner is this, like, lucrative, cushy thing. Like, she shouldn't have to just, like, shell out to have security because some Confederate maniac has a bee in its bonnet. Like, I thought it was completely unacceptable.
Yes, and it's indicative of the fact that most people who run for elected office and who get elected are themselves wealthy, and they're usually white dudes, and they have generational wealth, they're independently wealthy, whatever the case may be, and they can afford a security detail. But again, as you've discussed and laid out, mostly when you are a white man in office, you do not face those kinds of threats the way women and women of color do. And it goes from, I mean, from Tammy to AOC on, you know, on a federal level, I guess, or in Congress, you know, AOC saying we need security. And this is after January 6th, right? This is like, we need better security in and around the Capitol. And it seems like that's only reserved for people who, like the speaker, or who people who just privately fund it themselves. And who's got the money for that? I mean, this is ostensibly, these should be public servants, and this is just the least we could do for them.
Exactly. And if we're saying we want to have a representative democracy where lots of different folks from lots of different backgrounds can be public servants, that should include people who, I'm sorry, can't afford a private security detail. It shouldn't just be for wealthy people. And I feel like we are creating a situation where the only people who can reasonably and safely hold public office are people who have independent wealth to pay the astronomical costs that are involved with security, and but online and offline security. And so I think it's a real problem. And, you know, I should say, like, with the Tammy Sawyer situation, the charges were eventually dropped against the person who was harassing her. You know, it sounds like Tammy felt like this case was not handled seriously.
Right.
She talks about how the judge was, like, really palling it up with the defendant who she says was harassing her. And when the judge was like, oh, you know, why did the don't go on Facebook Live? It wasn't because he wanted Tammy to feel safe. It was because he didn't want that guy to make his case that much harder to have it be dismissed. And so when the charges were dismissed, Tammy wrote on Facebook, she said that even though the judge called his actions pathetic, he could not identify a reasonable level of fear on her part. And so I would actually argue that like
God
weird, I know it's so fucked up. And like, I think that weird vibe, that tightrope of like, I have to show public grace kind of creates this impossible situation where it's like, oh, well, you can handle it. Like, you're a Black woman. It's just like part of showing up and being a visible Black woman. You're not afraid, whatever, whatever. And I think that's part of it. It's this impossible situation that we face.
You're used to it. No, imagine if she had freaked out in that video. Imagine if she'd gotten angry, right? It would have been used against her. The dude would have used it to file charges against her. Right. And you know, that would have flown. And this judge would have been like, oh, that. He would have loved that. He was just waiting for her to go off on him. And she didn't. She had to keep her cool, which is asked of marginalized people all the time. Because when you raise your voice, somehow that is that's a threat. But yeah, I think the other thing I was going to say, and this is a terrible comparison, but when it comes to the justice system, it's just right there for the taking. Like, you know that rape victims, their cases are not taken seriously often if they don't, quote unquote, fight back, right? So, and in this case, oh, she wasn't afraid. She wasn't afraid because she didn't raise her voice or she didn't run. She wasn't physically running at the time. So therefore, there was no fear. Like, what are you talking about? This is all about surviving.
And you bring up such a good point about the ways that we really just failed survivors and made survivors walk a really impossible tightrope in public. And it's just really fucked up. And yeah, it makes me very sad. And
totally.
Today, Tammy Sawyer is no longer in public office. She is pursuing a PhD. And don't get me wrong, like, she is still doing great things. Like, we will hear her. I am so sure we're going to hear her name again, like, just because she's no longer in public office. I don't think this is like the end of her road by any margin. But I do think that we should acknowledge this, like, added burden that she was forced to carry because of her identity. You know, pursuing charges against somebody who gave out her address and encouraged people to harass her. And it's like, we, rather than taking the time to really reflect on that or acknowledge that, we just move on. We're just like, oh, yeah, like, it just feels like a footnote as opposed to something that is a real marker of our democracy and how unwell our democratic system is right now.
It's also, it reminds me of like, she was working with Black Voters Matter when I had her on. So she also has done incredible activism, and you're totally right. We'll continue to do so. But it reminds me of like women in comedy, you know, where it's like a lot of male bookers will be like, well, look, I would put more women on my show, but like, well, they're not any good women. I don't know any female comics. It's like, number one, you're blind, and there are tons of amazing women, female comics, but also it's like, yeah, look at the industry writ large. Like, look at the culture of comedy in a lot of ways. We don't have HR. There's not, it's like a not a safe space specifically for women and for women of color. The comedy space just isn't, you know, right? Like, and it's the same thing with elected office. You're just like, well, you know, we love to have like some kind of quota or have like more women in office, but just they don't run. And I think Republicans are so guilty of that too, you know, because it's like they have what, like three female senators? It's just, it's like the lowest in internationally. I think the U.S. Congress is one of the least representative bodies when it comes to gender. And so, and like, and it's just like, well, we'd support them if they would run for office. No, they run for office. They just get torn down. I mean, I'm also thinking of someone like Katie Hill in California, right? Like, they get torn the fuck apart. So, yeah.
Yeah, and it's funny that you, I mean, not funny, but what Katie Hill went through was a sex crime. Like, she was the victim of a sex crime by an ex-romantic partner who was, like, harassing her. And yet, it's like, we just have a really fucked up culture when it comes to women. I guess I'll just say that. Like,
that's
all I can really say.
Bean Dad, The Dress, 30 to 50 feral hogs. If you knew what any of those were, you spend too much time online. And hey, I do too. 16th Minute of Fame is a new weekly podcast hosted by me, Jamie Loftus, where every week I take a closer look at an internet character of the day. Who were they? What made them so notorious? Why did the internet choose them? And what does a person do when they're suddenly confronted with more attention than the human psyche can handle? I'll be talking to internet historians, experts, and yes, the main characters themselves to get a fuller picture. Because I think that even outside individual experiences, a character of the day tells us something about how the internet worked at that time and how the attention economy developed into the freaky three-headed dragon it is today. Together, we probably won't be able to properly log out, but we can take a walk down scary internet memory lane and see one day a little more clearly. Listen to 16th Minute of Fame on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Something that makes me crazy is when people say, well, I had this career before, but it was a waste. And that's where the perspective shift comes, that it's not a waste, that everything you've done has built you to where you are now. This is She Pivots, the podcast where we explore the inspiring pivots women have made and dig deeper into the personal reasons behind them. Join me, Emily Tisch Sussman, every Wednesday on She Pivots as I sit down with inspiring women like Misty Copeland, Brooke Shields, Vanessa Hudgens, and so many more. We dive into how these women made their pivot and their mindset shifts that happened as a result. It's a podcast about women, their stories, and how their pivot became their success. Listen to She Pivots on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
The Big Take from Bloomberg News brings you what's shaping the world's economies with the smartest and best-informed business reporters around the world.
Western nations like the U.S. and Europe.
Mexico will likely have its first female president.
And then you have China.
And help you understand what's happening, what it means, and why it matters.
He'll get his yo-yos to Europe in time. But the longer this drags on, the more worry he's getting.
They knew that they needed to do this as fast as they possibly could to get a drug on the market as fast as they could.
I'm David Gura.
I'm Sarah Holder.
I'm Saleha Mohsen. We cover the stories behind what's moving money and markets.
Basically, everyone was expecting, if not a calamity, certainly a recession.
But the problem is that that paperwork, as our reporting showed, is fake.
As someone who's covering the market, I'm often very worried about an imminent collapse. I'm thinking about it quite often.
Listen to The Big Take on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
So I want to talk about one more elected official and her experience in public office, Kia Morris. She made history in 2014 as Vermont's only Black woman lawmaker. Her husband, James, grew up in Bennington, Vermont, and she went to college in Chicago but relocated back to Vermont to become a lawmaker. Her career was very short-lived because it was completely derailed by online harassment and violent threats by self-proclaimed white nationalist Max Misch. Misch was kind of known as like a violent...
Wait. His name is Max Misch?
Max Misch.
Dude, white nationalists have the dumbest names.
They really do. Like, they really do.
Max Misch. Misch Mash. I don't know. I'm just like, that is the stupid... Anyway, sorry. It's like a Mickey Mouse name. That's a made-up
name. It's so stupid. So he's kind of like a known violent asshole. Side note, he looks exactly like whatever you're thinking that he looks like based on the behavior I'm about to describe. I can tell you that you're right. Whatever you're thinking, yes, that's what he looks like.
Very red-faced. Super red face.
You got it. Mm-hmm. You got it. So Misch, he pled guilty to both first-degree aggravated domestic assault and disorderly conduct as a hate crime. So he has this, like, he doesn't have a great, like, he's like a known shithead, I guess.
So he's been through a lot is what you're saying.
Yes, he's just a real victim, you know? And so Kia, when she supports a gun safety bill, she starts to experience animosity from gun rights advocates in Vermont because of her support of this legislation. Now, many legislators and the governor were targeted with, like, angry mail and messages over this law. But the kind of content that she gets is very different because she's a Black woman and the only Black woman in the legislature. So, you know, she's not just getting, like, oh, we didn't like that you support this bill. She's getting frightening, horrific, racist messages, particularly from Max Misch. Max starts sending her these, like, racist memes on Twitter and elsewhere about her support for the bill. Kia says that she gets an uptick in the intensity of this kind of harassment after a columnist for the white supremacist website, The InfoStormer, posts about her reelection and starts tagging, like, residents in it.
The InfoStormer. Sorry, I had to give that a moment.
Jeez. I know. I feel like it's like...
We storm the truth.
They're, like, putting a bunch of words into, like, an AI generator or something. And it's like, InfoStormer, that's going to be it.
Like, you mean Daily Stormer? No, we're, like, a breakaway of the Daily Stormer. Who even is that?
Exactly.
InfoStormer.
It's so ridiculous. And so, in a 10-page report published by the Vermont Attorney General's Office, it outlines almost 50 instances of threatening behavior where her or her family or her neighbors called the police. And so first,
Jesus,
it's like,
in Vermont?
In Vermont.
Oh, you guys.
And it's funny because you think of Vermont as like a progressive state, but, you know, it's like, this shit happens, you know?
Mm-hmm. It's not just Bernie building a fire endlessly and the coat factory.
Or like wearing mittens.
Exactly. It's Vermont. It's more than mittens.
That should be their slogan.
Yeah. That's what Max Misch wants. Like, these guys must be so mad that Bernie, like, put them on the map as
the governor of Vermont is a Republican.
Yeah, it's one of those states, right? It's one
Vermont's
of those sort of
weird.
Like, it's kind of a Max Misch state, you know? It's a Misch
Misch. It's a Max Misch state, yeah.
It's a Max Misch of ideology.
Their governor is, I think his name is Phil Scott, and he's like, this is like his fourth time.
Right. Oof. And it was the one issue that Sanders, like, Clinton was to the left of Sanders on because there's so many gun enthusiasts in Vermont.
Yeah.
And Sanders was, I mean, I think now that's like, I mean, how many mass shootings has there been since 2016, right? So even now, I don't think he can hold that line, but it's been the sort of one gray area where he was like, had to appease the gun folks in his state.
Yeah, I get, I mean, like, honestly, researching this episode, I get it. I was like, well, I don't think I realized how fervent gun ideology is. Like, I live in D.C., so, like, there's gun crimes here, but, like, individuals don't have the same kind of connection to it. And when I was researching this episode, I was like, oh, wow, like, I forget how different it is in different states. That, like, it's a real issue.
Right. It's they're all arming up for the imagined crime. Whereas, like, DC actually has a little bit of it.
Yeah. So the kinds of messages that she's getting from Max Mish are just racist garbage, you know, go back to Africa, it's the only place that you'll be safe, that kind of thing, right? And so in August of 2016, she files a complaint with the FBI where she says that this guy and his associates are harassing her on Twitter. But as online harassment often works, it doesn't just stay online. It bleeds from Twitter and Facebook into her offline life. On election day, she's doing a campaign event at a polling place, and she sees this guy, Max, there staring at her and weirding her out. Then somebody breaks into her home. They stole about 100 of her husband's neckties and littered them across a cemetery in her home, which is very weird. It's like a very weird thing.
So can you imagine them getting together and being like, so what should we do? You know, should we put like a horse in her bed, like in, you know, Godfather? No. I saw this one thing on like the Lifetime channel. We're going to do the neckties.
The necktie thing.
Pete, I don't know if we should do the neck. No, trust me. We're going to do the necktie thing. It'll be crazy. We just put a little necktie on every single gravestone.
It's such a what does that weird, even specific, like, way to fuck with somebody.
Yes. It's so bizarre. You know, it's like a snowman, but of headstones. And you put we're going to get the corncob pipe and the carrot nose and then one of their neckties. It'll freak her out. I mean, probably mission accomplished.
Yeah, she was completely freaked out. Also, her home was vandalized with paintballs.
But then we're going to bake her a pie. So one hot piping apple pie.
Yeah, a lot of mixed signals from these harassers.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
A house nearby that has a ton of her like campaign paraphernalia on their windows gets a racist mailer shoved under the door. And then her babysitter reports that a man in a car outside of her home is recording their house. So, like, just like
Jesus Christ.
Weird, scary shit that maybe does not. Like, I kind of see whoever's doing this. It kind of seems like they're trying to operate on like a level of like, it's enough to freak you out, but not enough to be like, you know, the kind of crime that the police would take seriously. Like, I feel like they're really walking a line of like, it has to be scary, but not scary enough that like somebody in power would take this seriously.
But that's sort of the tricky thing with harassment generally, right? And with like crimes, whether they be, I mean, especially sexual crimes, but like, is that gray area? And it's the sort of, you know, I know it's overused, but that microaggression, but this is obviously much more than that. Like the stalking, right? The harassing and harassment. It's like, well, did he enter with a gun? Did it? Like, no, buddy, there's a car outside. Someone's filming me. And it's just like, and of course, cops, not the most empathetic, not the best at dealing with some of these, the warning signs, which, by the way, is really just, hey, do you have a history of DV? Yeah. Then you should have someone tailing you at all times because likely you're going to do some other shit to somebody else.
And you probably shouldn't have a gun.
And you definitely shouldn't have a gun.
Like, just some common sense, like, yeah, if you've been threatening your domestic partner, maybe let's not get a gun in the mix. Like, just, you know. So the police, it sounds like, don't really do anything. Like, they don't, when somebody breaks into her house, they don't, like, take fingerprints or whatever. She gets a restraining order against him, but it only lasts for 1 year. After the restraining order expires, Max Mish contacts her again on social media, writing on Twitter, "You will never silence me. Every time you attend a political rally at the Four Corners or another local venue and I'm aware of the event, I will troll the hell out of you and other subversives there. Maybe I'll bring a friend or three with me, too. Stop pushing social justice on your nearly entirely white constituency in Bennington, Vermont. Go back to Chicago if you want to engage in social justice warrior bullshit. We will continue to fight against you and your efforts to make our town and state look more like your mongrel son."
Ooh.
So pretty fucked up. Like, not good. And so I understand why she was, like, terrified and unnerved. But unfortunately, the attorney general declines to press charges against this guy, explaining that in this case, the online communications that were sent to Ms. Morris by Max Mish and others were clearly racist and offensive. However, the First Amendment does not make speech sanctionable merely because it is objectionable. The question here is whether the messages and context were communicating a serious expression of intent to harm Ms. Morris or her family.
Sorry, I didn't mean to interrupt. Yes.
The fact that a number of the messages were directed at her as in her role as an elected official raises the issue of whether they were intended to express political opposition through the use of hyperbole and insult, as noted in the case above. Therefore, there appears to be insufficient evidence to pursue criminal charges under Vermont law.
Oh, that's so, case closed. Such bullshit. I mean, that's such bullshit. Because that's basically like, well, it's open season. You know, and here we are in a moment where it's like, oh my God, someone protested outside of Brett Kavanaugh's home. Like, how dare you? You know what? We really need to beef up security on white men in power, like, or the Supreme Court is just being targeted. Like, no, these are the stories that happen all the time on a local level. People have been harassed for decades and we don't hear it. Gabby Giffords has to get shot in the head and we still don't have security details for elected officials. I mean, it's just how many more instances do you need? And that's just so perfect. It's like, oh, okay, we know who we choose to protect. We know when people raise the alarm. It's when fucking Ted Cruz gets trolled at a Yankees game. And then it's like, oh, my God.
Yeah. And it creates this like really obviously false, frustrating both sides narrative of like, oh, they both sides do it. And it's like, well, someone writing in chalk outside of Brett Kavanaugh's home is different than like breaking into Nancy Pelosi's home and hitting her husband on the head with a hammer. It's like those are not analogous. So like, let's not pretend that they are. Like, I hate this vibe of like, I think that political violence and threats against elected officials is like a should be a nonpartisan issue. But I hate this on this vibe that like we have to be completely disingenuous about which side is doing it in a way that is like much more fucking scary.
Yes.
So case closed. They're not going to press any charges against this guy. There's a press conference where the DA is announcing that he does not intend to press charges against Max Misch. After the DA speaks about freedom of speech, Kia gets up to the podium to speak, and guess who comes in? Max Misch. He's wearing a Pepe the Frog shirt, and you can hear everyone's reaction when he enters.
No.
We have a disruption here.
No. 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 No.
Out. Out. Max out. Misch out. Has entered out. The press conference.
Why is this allowed?
Why is
this allowed?
Out. Why is he not allowed, I guess?
And we have to listen to everybody. Oh, whether we like it or not. But we don't have to put up with him. We also have to make a man realize what he's done, all these crimes. It's not acceptable.
We're here at one side of the store. I'd like to say something too, please.
So I'm happy to take other questions other than that. Alan.
Were there any federal civil rights violations that could be pursued?
We have to feel safe.
I don't believe so. The U.S. Attorney. So with that, I'm going to conclude the press conference unless there are other questions.
I'd like to say something, please.
Hold on one second.
As a political opponent who was accused of being a Nazi myself, I think we're hearing one side of the story.
Oh, my God.
So this is failed lawmaker Kevin Hoyt.
Kaya's politics, and I was called a Nazi. I was called a white supremacist.
You probably are, my guy.
Years, obviously, racism exists in Vermont State. It's like hate, right? It's like all these things. That it's crazy. We don't want these things, but they're part of our fabric of society. I question to what degree, though. I call bullshit on Miss Morris. I think...
Okay, so you kind of get the idea.
Wow.
Also, FYI, Kevin Hoyt if folks are interested, he's his own like weird guy who folks you can look at him up if you're interested. But it's so funny that he's like, I was also unfairly called a Nazi, and I think we should let him speak. It is just wild, right? Like complete pandemonium. Onlookers use their jackets to try to block Misch. It's this big dramatic scene, but not to Max Misch. To him, it is all a big joke. He told the Free Press, I am a troll. I like it. I like this. Like, it's just funny to him. And so I would love to play a little clip of him responding to the Free Press.
Because I can.
Yes, you can. Absolutely.
That didn't explain why you do.
But that's why we were holding up our coats, so that people of color don't have to see that hate. And we're surrounding you, and we don't like it. It's vile.
It's not vile. Acceptable.
Yes, you have the right to put the shirt on, but I have the right to tell you that it's hateful, it's cruel, and it's vile.
I see. Ugh. You can cry about all you want. I don't care.
I'm not crying. I'm pissed.
All right. It's Max. Yeah. Are you intentionally being provocative? That's what people want.
Yeah. Yes.
Why are you being provocative?
I like trolling people. It's fun.
God, I'm so over that concept.
Do you do
and look
up,
how
have
much
you done,
attention he's getting for doing it.
Have you done other
so he's clearly just someone who likes to, like, this is a joke to him. I don't think that he's, any of this is serious to him. I think it's just a joke.
Oh, my God. If mommy
the fucking
issues.
The Pepe shirt. I'm like, ugh.
Just like mom issues in a person, you know, like, it's because I want attention because I didn't get enough as a child and no one will play with me. And one time they ditched me in the sandbox for like the volleyball court and I didn't know how to play volleyball. And, you know, it's just like oh, my God, go to therapy, bro. Go to therapy. People like, again. What is it? What will it take? And I think that's the woman who's like, yes, I have the right to also, you know, stand in front of you and call you hateful. She was excellent. And then she points out that the media is going to the provocateur and saying, which is just a really funny statement. I mean, I don't no disrespect to local news, but like or the free press. But like it is very funny to be like, are you being intentionally provocative? Like, yeah. Like, what is the other answer to that? No, in my heart of hearts, I do believe that white people are a superior race. Like, huh, interesting. Expound on that. You know, like, what's the other answer? Yes, he's being provocative on purpose. Does it have to do with his fucked up ideology? Doesn't even matter.
Yeah, and asking him about that with a camera, with a bunch of camera crews in his face, like, sir, are you intentionally being provocative? Are we, like, it's like you're providing, the answer is clearly yes, and you're providing him the exact thing that a provocateur wants, a platform, yes. Yeah.
And this is, and I think it's important to remember, 2014 or maybe 15, yeah. But kind of when the media was lending a platform to people like Richard Spencer, people like these sort of, you know, Nazis in suits or sort of, you know, and on the cusp of the election of Donald Trump, effectively saying, maybe we need to listen to Nazis a little bit more. Yeah. And now that they've made their message a little more couth and digestible, you know, hey, they're not hateful. They just believe we should live in separate communities for people of color and white people. There's nothing hateful about that. Like, I mean, just the mind trick that I think white nationalists pulled on the media and the media in turn pulled on us. We're seeing that in a microcosm in this example that you brought up.
Yeah, it infuriates me. And yeah. I will never forget this. I like the publication for the most part, but like there's a Mother Jones piece where it's like, oh, the dapper white supremacists walking through town. Like that I feel like it's like burned into my memory of like, what are we doing? What are we normalizing? What are we glamorizing? What are we giving a platform? And the thing that fucks with me is I worry that we learned nothing. I worry that when I look at like how the media is covering somebody like Ron DeSantis, for instance, sure. I worry that we have learned nothing. The media has learned nothing about what kind of hateful bullshit ideology they will amplify and normalize, despite the fact that he's like criminalizing trans youth and shit and like putting immigrants on buses and shit, like
rewriting history books.
It infuriates me the way that this kind of like horse race kind of political coverage is going. I see us poised to do the same thing again, where I see these memes about like Ron DeSantis is tall or like things like that, where I'm like, yeah, he's also like a hate monger. Can we talk about that?
Right. They're just so desperate to move on from Trump, even though they're not. I think there's just this. I mean, that's like our political system is such. Especially the media's like following of the political system is so reliant on the idea that there are two rational actors. Obviously, we have all of two parties in this country. Yay. And they're both rational and they're both great and we can level with them. And, you know, it's a balance of powers. And it's like, no, it's not. It's bullshit. One side doesn't believe in a balance of powers. They believe in authoritarianism. But yeah, you're absolutely right. Because it is exactly that. Ron DeSantis is the buttoned up Donald Trump and Richard Spencer is the buttoned up David Duke, right? And so as long as he's not openly saying he's a member of the KKK, it's all good. And well, even though people hailed Hitler in his little, you know, like hotel speech when Trump won, that's fine because he's in a suit and he's got a nice haircut.
Yeah, I want us to be better. We deserve better media that can like tell a better version of these stories that isn't so harmful. Like, I'm exhausted because I know we're not going to get it.
Yeah. And also, there's enough on the Democratic side. Like, there's enough in... We got a lot of, like, conservative Dems. There's tons of drama on this side. Talk about those folks. But anyway, I digress.
Bean Dad, The Dress. 30 to 50 feral hogs. If you knew what any of those were, you spend too much time online. And hey, I do too. 16th Minute of Fame is a new weekly podcast hosted by me, Jamie Loftus, where every week I take a closer look at an internet character of the day. Who were they? What made them so notorious? Why did the internet choose them? And what does a person do when they're suddenly confronted with more attention than the human psyche can handle? I'll be talking to internet historians, experts, and yes, the main characters themselves to get a fuller picture. Because I think that even outside individual experiences, a character of the day tells us something about how the internet worked at that time and how the attention economy developed into the freaky three-headed dragon it is today. Together, we probably won't be able to properly log out, but we can take a walk down scary internet memory lane and see one day a little more clearly. Listen to 16th Minute of Fame on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Something that makes me crazy is when people say, well, I had this career before, but it was a waste. And that's where the perspective shift comes, that it's not a waste, that everything you've done has built you to where you are now. This is She Pivots, the podcast where we explore the inspiring pivots women have made and dig deeper into the personal reasons behind them. Join me, Emily Tisch Sussman, every Wednesday on She Pivots as I sit down with inspiring women like Misty Copeland, Brooke Shields, Vanessa Hudgens, and so many more. We dive into how these women made their pivot and their mindset shifts that happened as a result. It's a podcast about women, their stories, and how their pivot became their success. Listen to She Pivots on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
The Big Take from Bloomberg News brings you what's shaping the world's economies with the smartest and best-informed business reporters around the world.
Western nations like the U.S. and Europe.
Mexico will likely have its first female president.
And then you have China.
And help you understand what's happening, what it means, and why it matters.
He'll get his yo-yos to Europe in time. But the longer this drags on, the more worry he's getting.
They knew that they needed to do this as fast as they possibly could to get a drug on the market as fast as they could.
I'm David Gura.
I'm Sarah Holder.
I'm Saleha Mohsen. We cover the stories behind what's moving money and markets.
Basically, everyone was expecting, if not a calamity, certainly a recession.
But the problem is that that paperwork, as our reporting showed, is fake.
As someone who's covering the market, I'm often very worried about an imminent collapse. So I'm thinking about it quite often.
Listen to The Big Take on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
So while all of this was happening to Kia, her husband, James, was in very poor health and he had to have open heart surgery. So I know, like, this shit had to be stressful for her. And so perhaps not surprisingly, 10 days after she won the Democratic nomination for a third term as state representative, she announced that she was dropping her campaign and packed up and left town shortly thereafter for her family's safety. This is really sad. Like, she talks about how her son, who at the time was 7, saw the threats that she got, like, saw them and, like, understood them and had questions about them and was so scared that he tried to build a panic room in their home out of his closet.
Oh,
and so, like,
oh my God.
It is scary and sad. And after she left town, Mish was quoted as saying, "I won. I did it." So, yeah, just a real piece of shit.
Good for you, asshole. I hope it's given. You know, he's still unhappy. Isn't that crazy? I think he's still unhappy.
He's still insufferable, that's for sure.
This is the threat of equality. This is what, I mean, I love it. Like, you want social justice. Like, what are you talking about? This is a predominantly white state, a predominantly white electorate, a predominantly white, you know, whatever, state body. In no way is she trying, again, by her mere existence. Her mere existence and the threat the supposed threat of one day there could be equality. One day there could be two Kia Morrises. Oh my God.
Like still all of two equality. Black women in their legislature.
Yep. And then it'll be all over. I mean, we'll still have the power, white dudes, but it'll feel like we don't because someone's going to quote Audre Lorde to us.
And we'll explode.
Like, or what? Or like someone's going to like want to create a program for black youth in our state. Like, Christ.
So this story does not end there because if you're thinking, wow, it sounds like officials didn't do a great job of taking the situation seriously or investigating it, you would be right. After Kia left office, she filed a complaint with Vermont's Human Rights Commission in 2019 alleging discrimination by the police department and the town of Bennington. An investigation found that the Bennington police chief failed to disclose relevant information about her harasser to her, including his possession of high-capacity firearms and details of an interview that they did with his ex-wife where she expressed concern for Kia's safety. The investigator recommended that the commission find reasonable grounds that the town of Bennington discriminated against her on the basis of race and color, and the town had to publicly apologize and agreed to pay her $137,000. So, yeah, they didn't properly investigate it. They withheld information that, frankly, she should have been informed of. And they just, like, didn't take it seriously. And
yeah.
When online threats of and online abuse are not taken seriously by people with power, dangerous things can happen. It can get really, really scary. And honestly, like, I am grateful that it didn't come to, like, actual physical violence. That like, you know, it didn't wind up like that. But it so easily could have.
Mm-hmm. Oh, obviously. And it's like, and I mean, essentially she was paid to kind of go away, you know? Like,
yeah,
there's a settlement. I would argue it's very low, but it's just like, well, that's the cost of doing business and attempting to be a black woman in the state legislature, like, or in leadership. Bye. Like, anyway, sorry. It's, and I think it's also interesting because you see, again, there's like, it's a white people problem. Like, I'm reminded of W. Kamau Bell's, like, you know, come get your boy when it comes to Trump. And it's in terms of what happened to Kia, it's like, it's not a Kia problem. It's a everybody else problem. And you see, like, you know, some of the white, you know, officials or police officers, folks around. And I think it's like, you know, you guys are the ones who have a lot of work to do. It's a you all problem. It's not a Kia problem. So how is this systemic? And also, when are we going to get to the idea that once everyone is liberated, once there is equality, that will mean, or once the most marginalized are liberated, it will mean liberty and equality and freedom for everybody. Sorry, I've got to practice that part before I run for president.
Yeah, I mean, I would vote for you tomorrow.
Thank you. Thanks. Hell yeah.
So these stories are obviously heartbreaking, but I also think they show the true cost of, to all of us, of what happens when things like online harassment and abuse just go unchecked. And we know this. This kind of harassment keeps marginalized people from running for office. You know, I'm sad to say that I think a lot of people will hear about the experiences of women like this and they'll be like, oh, well, that is just the cost of being a public figure.
Yes.
Deal with it. But
yes.
We deserve a political landscape where, like, this is not just the cost of wanting to serve your community, especially when that cost is so much higher for the most marginalized among us.
Absolutely. I mean, I think with the latest midterms and the fact that, like, young people came out in droves and that you had, you know, the squad growing with a lot of young folks and specifically young people of color, we will stop normalizing this kind of crap. And because there will be just more of it, because there will be mm-hmm. more women in office. There will be more people of color in office, which is a good thing. But then this is the crap that comes along with it. And so it's like, not to mention the fact that younger generations are, God, I mean, from middle school dealing with online harassment, from peers, from randos, like, it's just gone are the days of random AOL chats and me logging in being like, I am blonde, sexy lady. Hello. Sorry. I'm just talking about how I was on the internet as a kid.
That's how I was, too. I was like, yes, that's how I was, too.
Right. And you're like, now it's like, oh, no, there's consequences and everyone's using their real name and, like, people are stalking you and what? Not that that wasn't happening then. But so I feel like, especially since young folks are also more internet savvy and online harassment savvy and experience it, We will arrive at a point, Bridget, and you will be vindicated in all of your work in this show and everything that you've been sounding the alarm on. I know we will be vindicated, but it's just going to take a while. It's going to give us like a decade, which is too long, but I feel like we will arrive in another point where this shit is just not as normalized.
Yeah, I actually agree with you. I think that, like, you know, we've seen historic numbers of young folks, women, people of color running for office in this last cycle. And I just think that we are different. I don't think that we're going to tolerate this. And I think that we are going to hold people with power, whether it's legislators or policymakers or tech leaders, we're going to force them to, you know, do what they can to create a situation where this isn't the norm, because this is not a functional democracy. This is not a healthy democracy when this is how the political landscape and the media landscape that people are trying to compete in. It's just not healthy. It's not a functional democracy. And I think young people are smart enough to see that.
Totally. And our Senate and our Congress are old. I mean, you remember when Zuckerberg testified like a few years ago, and it's like you got senators being like, oh, Mr. Zuckerberg, what is the FI stand for in Wi-Fi? Because I think Y is wireless. But what is the FI? You know, just like, you're like, hey, Mr. Zuckerberg, what is my password to my Amazon account? Like, the most Luddite-ass Senate, right? And that's going to change. And I think when that change, as we slowly change it, yes, we will hopefully have more protections.
Yeah, it's so frustrating to watch those hearings where it's like, the people who are in charge of making our policies around technology, like, I forget what lawmaker it was, but was like, will you commit to ending Finsta? And Zuckerberg was like, what the fuck are you talking about? Like, what are you saying, sir? Like, what are you saying? And these are the people, like, I mean, it also starts with getting, like, more young people in office. Because, like, we just, I mean.
Yeah. I was just going to say, and surrounding them, too, you know.
Like, absolutely.
Supporting, like, getting aid, you know, ask the staffers.
10% of Senate is made up of men named John. That's, like, a real thing. Like, spelled two different ways, but 10% of Senate are John.
Yeah.
That is
a solid name when you're born in 1929.
Yeah, when you're a white guy who watched the moon landing, yeah, you that's. And so, you know, when it comes to these kinds of attacks and harassment that we're seeing, something I think is really interesting and telling is that it seems like the goal of these attacks is to really destroy marginalized candidates, their resolve, and to get them to internalize this abuse that is directed at them. This is from the folks who did the study at the Center for Democracy and Technology, that they wanted, that these candidates felt very strongly that the point of this kind of harassment was to just get them to internalize and accept the oppression that they face as women of color and just drop out of politics. And so you see that has an incredibly, like, silencing effect, you know, and unfortunately, the research bears this out, that these kinds of threats do keep women from running for office or just sort of engaging in public life in general or civic life, because they're smart enough to see the way that other women are treated. They see the way that law enforcement and media really do nothing or make it worse. And they're like, no fucking thanks. I don't want to deal with it. You know, just this afternoon, Nancy Pelosi announced that she's ending her career in politics on the heels of that horrific hammer attack against her husband, who not only was attacked, after being attacked, elected officials and, like, political figures and Elon Musk spread homophobic conspiracy theories about the attack, joked about it. And part of me is like, I can understand why she's just like, I'm out, you know? When a woman runs for office or is a public figure and she is attacked, it is never just her. It is her partner. It is her kids. It is her parents. It is her community. And I can understand why women are just like, you know, the cost is just too high. I don't want to put myself or my family at risk to run for public office. And so I'm not going to do it, or I'm going to check out of it. I can understand that. And so I think if women can't run for public office safely, then we will never have a truly representative democracy or a functional democracy in general. You know, the author of that report said, a lack of representation means that we lose the important insights and solutions to public policy problems that women of color will bring. We will all suffer We all suffer if everyone does not have a seat at the table. And I could not agree more. Like, it is not just about the women who are attacked and targeted. All of us lose out when we don't even have a shot at a landscape where people can safely serve their public through running for office.
Absolutely. I mean, look, I'm not the biggest fan of Pelosi, but I do respect the hell out of her. And what I will say with people like her and also people like Clinton, I wish they would do what Monica Lewinsky has done. And I think that's part and parcel of the fact that Monica Lewinsky is a little younger, but like taking her, the public, the scrutiny, the harassment, what she was put through, and using it to actually try and change the culture. And I think that Hillary and Nancy Pelosi come from more of a generation that's like, you gotta like go, you know, basically shut up and get along. And like whatever it is, like get along to go along. I'm really terrible with any kind of idioms today, but you guys know what I mean.
Yes.
Like we right. And so, and it's like, no, I think we're done with that. And I think that young women and all people are done with the like, no, you have to shut up in order to appease these systems and halls of power. It's like, no, you don't. And so I hope that Nancy Pelosi in her, because she's not going to rest. This woman's never going to rest until she's dead. Like, she's going to keep on working. And I hope she uses, you know, her time to try and not cut the ladder from out underneath her, but help young women also accelerate and succeed in politics as well. She hasn't got a great track record with that. Going to be real. She jumped on a little bit of the anti-squad, anti-Ilhan Omar, you know, calling Ilhan Omar anti-Semitic when she totally was not being anti-Semitic. So, Nancy, you know, I hope you do better. Thank you for your service.
I agree with you. Like, Monica Lewinsky, she's my white whale podcast guest because I think the way that she has turned something that was, like, meant to silence her and belittle her, she turned it into a platform, and she really changed the conversation about online shaming and online harassment and online bullying, and I respect the hell out of it. Monica, if you're listening, please call me. you're my white whale guest.
She did that TED Talk about the price of shame.
That's right, and she has a really good doc. She's in a really good documentary called 15 Minutes of Shame on HBO Max, which everyone should watch, all
great
about
doc.
Online shaming. But yeah, I agree. I hope that this becomes a kind of situation where women are not expected to suffer in silence and have a kind of like poised face because, you know, it doesn't serve anybody. And it's funny because in an interview I listened to with Kia, she said that so many people were like, you should just ignore this. You shouldn't stoop to their level. You should just ignore it. And I'm so glad that she didn't ignore it because it started a conversation about what is and is not acceptable in discourse. And you know, if you ignore it, it just festers and gets more empowered. And so the advice of just saying like, oh, rise above, you know, go high, don't go low, ignore it, you're too good to respond. I don't think that advice is really serving anybody, particularly if you're marginalized or you're like a young person who's coming up on this like online next generation.
Yes, absolutely. And I think it's why a lot of people who are harassed incessantly often post those DMs or that harassment or the, you know, air the voicemails that, you know, people like AOC or Ilhan Omar get or Pramila Jayapal, who I believe was threatened as well.
Yeah.
And it's like, more folks need to understand this is a daily occurrence before we actually like take it seriously. And whether or not Pepe Le Max Mish understands it, I mean, he's not getting paid by anybody, but he's absolutely part and parcel of this system designed to like, keep women and people of color out of any kind of decision-making process over their lives.
Exactly. And I'm so glad that you put it that way because this was my whole intention behind this podcast is that it's so easy to think that when someone is being targeted in this way, it's individual. And certainly it has individual impacts, of course, but it's also institutional. It's also systems. It's also, you know, power structures that enable it or, you know, amplify it or profit off of it, right?
Yep.
And so we need to start picking apart and calling out all of the systems that make this kind of harassment a viable thing for people to do and break those systems and say, we're not going to tolerate this. If you want to engage in this kind of discourse, we're not going to amplify it. We're not going to incentivize it. You're not going to be able to build a platform off of it. And it's not going to be effective.
you're going to pay $200 for that DM.
Yes. Honestly, I would accept some, like, harassing DMs if I got $200 every time it happened.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Okay, yeah, you got to give me $500. But yeah, say whatever you want need to say to me. SJW, cool, whatever.
Ka-ching!
Exactly. It's like a cameo, but for hate.
Yes. Ooh, you need to like pitch this to some venture capitalists, Fran.
But that's the whole thing. The irony is exactly what you're saying, which is these platforms already get that stuff for free.
Yes.
They're the ones making money off of the hate.
It's going into their pocket. And it's like, I would argue that marginalized people, we are absorbing the hate to make tech leaders more money, and
it's the externality of capitalism. And that's the thing. What if Google was like, listen, Bridget, if you get trolled, I'll give you $200 every time you like every like hateful tweet. That I'd be like, that'd be a good solution for the whole thing.
And it would certainly incentivize them to, you know, fix the problem, which is all we're asking for. And I guess this is my like overall point, you know. We, especially in the Democratic Party, we love our slogans like support Black women. Yes, trust Black women. Like I have a trust Black women shirt and I am all on board for like championing the leadership of Black women. But we can't just say, you know, support Black women without also being honest about the unfair, racist, sexist attacks and harassment that they will probably face when they get into these leadership roles that we like are vocally supporting them for. And so We need to be creating the conditions so that those women that we love to champion also have a chance at an equal playing field, that we're not just setting them up to be knocked down, to have to, like, you know, abandon their office and leave town because of harassment and threats and garbage.
Amen. And we didn't even talk about Ketanji Brown Jackson, but my mind went to her as well.
Yes. Coming soon.
Oh, yay. Okay.
Great example. Good.
Awesome.
That is all I have, Fran. There is like no one else that I would rather have dug into all this with than you.
Aww.
And I appreciate you taking the time after you've, you know, had so much going on.
So much going on. Babies, probably. It's been 2 hours. Time to feed yet again. I'm going to go soak my aching nipples, guys. That's
as you should.
TMI. Deal with it. We need to support women much more. But yeah, Bridget, this has been awesome. And I mean, awful, but also like people like you are like, oh yeah, there's hope.
There is hope. You make me feel very hopeful. And where can folks follow you and what you're up to?
Yeah, dude, follow me on all things at FraniFio, FraniFio. And then The Bituation Room is a podcast. It's also a live stream every Tuesday, 1 p.m. Pacific, 4 p.m. Eastern on YouTube and Twitch.
Yay.
Woo-hoo.
Woo.
Internet Hate Machine is a production of Cool Zone Media. For more podcasts from Cool Zone Media, check out our website, coolzonemedia.com, or find us on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Bean Dad, The Dress, 30 to 50 Feral Hogs. If you knew what any of those were, you spend too much time online. And hey, I do too. 16th Minute of Fame is a new weekly podcast hosted by me, Jamie Loftus. And every week, we take a closer look at an internet character of the day. Who are they? What made them so notorious? How did the internet or the algorithm choose them? And what does a person do when they're suddenly confronted with more attention than the human psyche can handle? Listen to 16th Minute of Fame on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
It's brand new season 2. I'm Marissa Thalberg.
And I'm Stephen Wolf Bedatum. And we're excited to be back having bigger, bolder, and always real conversations.
Straight from the C-suite front lines of marketing, media, and more.
We have great friends joining from people you may know, like Vilmer Valderrama and Bobby Burke.
And people you'll want to know. So grab a coffee or, hey, even an Aperol Spritz and come join us on America's number one podcast network, iHeart.
Listen to Brand New on the iHeart Radio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Something that makes me crazy is when people say, well, I had this career before, but it was a waste. And that's where the perspective shift comes, that it's not a waste, that everything you've done has built you to where you are now. This is She Pivots, the podcast where we explore the inspiring pivots women have made and dig deeper into the personal reasons behind them. Join me, Emily Tisch Sussman, every Wednesday on She Pivots. Listen to She Pivots on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.